Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, June 22nd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the Internet through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app. Before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will download an app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either been stepped through that worksheet process, so it serves as a tutorial for how the system works, or they've called in with comments or questions or testimonials. And discussed how powerful this relatively simple tool is and how to use it in various situations in their lives. We hope people do that soon and often, primarily because it's brilliant that improves the quality of people's lives and relationships when they do. And secondarily, because it frequently leads to comments and questions and testimonials. And if you have any of those that you'd like to share with us, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, if you press 1, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will see that, turn on your microphone, and announce you by your area code. And we like it when people do that, particularly because it helps us live into our intention with this work. The intention with this work, this Internet show, the websites that we maintain, is to be of service. And it's far easier to be of service when people raise a hand and say, how about this? I'm struggling with this, or I just had a big success with this, or I don't understand this. And we leave the phone lines open, so to speak, for that kind of thing. And I encourage people, even if I'm in the middle of working with the Way of Mastery, or last year when we were doing the Course in Miracles, to raise a hand if you have a comment or a question, and I will either turn on your microphone immediately or as soon as it seems to make sense in the flow of the show. And as I mentioned, this year we're doing the Way of Mastery, which we began doing on January 10th. And for people who want to follow along with that or go and review some of that, I have created a special page on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website that holds the files just for this first half of the show since January 10th. And I'm a few shows behind right now, but most of them are up. And as time allows, I will continue to upload those. And in the not-too-distant future, I plan to upload the audio files of me reading lessons 13 through 24, which would be the Way of Transformation. And those are older files where I read into my computer just so that I could listen on the go. And that's without any commentary. That's as close to verbatim as I could manage in those readings. And what we've been doing since January 10th is going through the work, as my dad would say, with a fine-tooth comb, and reading and rereading and inviting questions and comments, trying to follow the instructions as much as possible. And in Lesson 13 and Lesson 12, it specifically said, you really might want to go back and take another deeper look at this work. The first 12 lessons and then the 13th lesson, and approach this as a set of tools, which is what we've been working on doing. Again, this 13th lesson in the Way of Mastery, the Way of Transformation, Lesson 1, is called You Are Unlimited Spirit. And where we left off yesterday was with the beginning of a heading that said, of a section that said, only you have the power to create your experience. It's really hearkening back to the first lesson where they offer that the first axiom in this work is that nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you, and you experience only the effects of your own choice. And it also clarified that that's not just your intellect and your conscious logical thought process. Oh, I want a candy bar, and then instantly a candy bar materializes in your hand. This is talking about using the intellect in a very limited way and becoming aware of and developing and strengthening an entirely different faculty of experience. They call it the awakened heart in this work. So, as I frequently point out, to my eye and ear, this book is like a fractal. This book has practically every bits of every lesson woven into every other lesson, almost like the holograms and the holographic images that, you know, if you break a holographic image on a piece of glass, every shard of glass will have within it the whole image. And a fractal is a repeating pattern that just has the core pattern repeated at many different levels of scale throughout the entire organism or structure. So here we are again in Lesson 13. You are unlimited spirit, and only you have the power to create your experience. So the next two words are listen carefully. So for a book that is as profound as this one is, for every once in a while there to be an admonition to wake up, listen carefully. This next part is even more important than some of the others. Listen carefully. No one has the power to create your experience. No one has the power to limit your experience. And nowhere in the laws of creation has it ever been written that you must conform your experience to the choices of another. You remain free. You remain free to freely choose to be the embodiment of Christ or not. You are the one who can bless creation or not. It begins when you are willing to assume responsibility for what you want to use time for. What are you spending your time doing? That is what you value. And if you're saying to yourself, well, I'm spending my time going to a job I hate because I absolutely have to, because, that is not the actual truth of your life. You choose to go to that job because you believe that you're limited, or you choose to go to that job because you like the things that you can purchase with the money that you make, or you go to that job from your own choice because you may believe you have no other choice. But it's your belief about it that makes it real for you. The text goes on and says, in truth, you are doing it anyway. In truth, you are always using time for exactly what you are choosing. You are not surviving. You are not trying to get things done that the world is requiring. Never is anything occurring except that you are having awareness of the effects of how you are choosing to use consciousness. And that is all. Imagine that that's all that's really happening. Imagine you weren't taught that growing up. But it doesn't change it. It's like if nobody ever mentioned the word gravity to you. Nobody ever taught you about the laws of physics and gravity. But it was still affecting everything you do. It was still woven into your experience of life. Well, the fact of the matter is, you're choosing how to use your consciousness moment to moment. Now, you've been choosing how to use your consciousness moment to moment, and that has created your experience of life moment to moment, and you've been living under the hallucination from your family and your culture that other people are creating your upsets and other people are creating your joys. Other people are responsible for the flow of life energy in and around you. But if you wake up to a teaching like this and start to observe it for yourself, you just might begin to understand that there's an entirely different process going on than the one you had believed was going on. And if you look into it a little bit more deeply and you start exercising consciously your faculty of choice, if you're like most other human beings that I've come across who've done this kind of work, your life will start to transform dramatically. I mean, there's a whole flood of thoughts going through my mind about all of the different ways that you could build a metaphor for this or a parable for this. Here's a person who doesn't understand the law of cause and effect relationships and doesn't understand the difference between a cause and effect relationship and a correlation. And I've talked about this before, that you know, if we had a person come down to Earth, beamed down by some kind of a Star Trek transporter, and they come from a planet where there's no atmosphere, so they have to be in a protective suit to protect them from our air and oxygen and all that good stuff. And they're in our house for a few days before we can get the battery pack so they can go out and walk around outside. and they just happen to walk into the main room that has a big bay window that looks out over a garden, and they just happen to walk into that room 8 or 10 times over the course of the few days that we're waiting for the battery pack. And every time they walk into that room, they look out in the garden and they see everything is still. Not a leaf is moving. And then the trees at the far end of the garden start to move. And soon after that, the chimes by the house start to move and make the most amazing sound. And our visitor from another planet is just enchanted by that sound. So a few days later, when the battery pack arrives and we get to go out and explore the grounds and, you know, go to the mall and all those things that you do with visitors, our visitor makes a beeline for the far end of the garden and grabs a tree branch and starts shaking it and then turns and looks expectantly at the house. And we walk over gently and say, "What are you doing?" And the visitor explains, "I'm trying to make the chimes ring." Because every time our visitor has looked out, it was completely still, and then the trees at the far end of the garden moved, and then the chimes moved. And so our visitor made the assumption that the trees moving is what made the chimes move. They drew a cause and effect relationship where there's only a co-relationship. But the fact of the matter is, there's another set of forces that are invisible to our visitor, and our visitor can't perceive them at any level because our visitor is wrapped in a protective suit to keep them from having exposure to our... So the visitor can't sense, see, or feel, or hear this other factor, which is responsible for moving both the trees and the chimes. Well, imagine that we weren't there to explain to our visitor that this is a dynamic caused by another force and that the trees are not moving the chimes. That visitor might drive herself to distraction, shaking the tree, and leave utterly frustrated and disappointed when all she would have to do to hear the chimes is go over and move the chimes. That's the kind of thing that's being talked to us about here in this lesson. We are working, we are slaving, we are beating ourselves up emotionally to try to have a different kind of life. And this work is telling us, quit shaking the tree and just go over and move the chimes. There's a different way for you to apply your mind energy to get far better results. Choose differently. The text goes on and says, here is where the way of mastery, the way of transformation begins. Ultimately, it's also where it ends. But the difference will be that you will no longer even want to choose anything that speaks of limitation. You will simply choose mind energy pointed at everything is available to you. You are pure spirit. And you are connected to all minds. And you are connected to the Christ mind. And you are connected to your Creator. And you have access to all of creation in each moment. The text goes on and says, even though the body mind that you once identified as yourself still seems to be moving about in space and time, you will not even look at the body mind and say, this is mine. You will simply say, the body mind is a temporary communication device brought forth from the ocean of my unlimited self, and I have done this a multitude of times in a multitude of universes. This is not a big deal. Your consciousness will literally shift. It will take a new perspective, and you will know that you are pure spirit and that you do not abide in time at all. And you will know that you can simply delight in utilizing the body-mind as a temporary communication device. And when you get on your airplane and you travel to some distant shore to a place that you are enjoying being in, you are still using the body-mind as a communication device between you and the earth, between you and the other creations that have come forth from other minds. Whether it is a beautiful building or a beautiful painting, all that you are ever experiencing is something that you have drawn to yourself through the medium of the body. It is an experience, and that is all. You are the unlimited one who is in the driver's seat. Now, think of all the different times, all the different ways it's woven into our language that we have limitations. Well, I'm only human. Well, I got caught up. Well, I was a victim of this or that. You know, I'm just one person. Well, there's not much I can do. All I can do is pray for them. Think of all the different ways in our language that we have created images, concepts of limitation. The next segment talks directly about that and says, let's bring awareness to the limiting definitions of ourselves that we have accumulated. So the first stage in the way of transformation is to step into the realization that you are unlimited spirit. You are far more than just the physical body. The second stage in the way of transformation requires that you begin to bring awareness to the little squiggly lines that you've drawn on the white and unlimited and perfectly unblemished canvas of your consciousness. Your psychologist would call these personalities or masks. We are inviting you to come to be aware of these little selves that you have created. You might want to begin by asking yourself, quote, what am I defending? What am I continuing on a daily basis that no longer fulfills me? After all, I've been there, I've done that, dozens of times. So how might I look upon these little selves, these definitions of myself, these little drops of foam on this temporary wave that I've brought forth? How might I use them differently? I wonder if I could create a brand new one. Close quotes. Why is this important? It is important because the squiggles you have drawn create your experience of life. As long as you believe that that's who or what you are, or that's the truth of your being, you create that experience. For instance, perhaps you say to yourself, well, I am Mary Jane. I'm a vice president at the bank. I was born in such and such a city. My parents are so and so and so and so. And I would really be different, except that my sister used to beat me when I was young. This work lets us know that the very moment you define yourself, you constrain yourself within the parameters that you have chosen to value. Instantly, you create exactly the experience of the vibrations that are the effects of those squiggles, of those lines that you draw, of those thoughts that you value, of those beliefs that you hold and pour your mind energy into. Think of those squiggles, those lines, those parameters of your little self. Think of them as the effect of certain pebbles that have been dropped into the pond of your consciousness. Once you draw a line, certain effects flow from it. What if you were to decide that you were going to create a self that sees itself as perfectly unlimited? Instead of saying, well, I have to go see my sister, and I know she used to beat me, but that's just the way it is. It's just who I am. It's all done. I can't change it. What if instead of that you said, quote, I am a perfectly unlimited being. I think I'll create a self who is an expression of, an extension of, the unlimited love of Christ. I'm going to go see this human being, and I'm going to utilize time for beaming as much love to them as I can. I won't label her as my sister or my parent or my old boss. I'm just going to recognize them as another consciousness. I'm going to choose to use my time to beam as much love to them as I can for no other reason than it will feel good to me to do so. I am the embodiment of Christ. And this other person may not know it, but that does not matter. I can enjoy that experience anyway. Close quotes. Do you see how that could begin to move you beyond an identification of a certain definition of yourself? And that definition has actually locked you into a narrow set of parameters, which can only have certain kinds of effects. What if you were to sit down with those that you call your parents and deliberately chose to look at them as beings that you had called into your field of awareness? What if you chose to see that they were infinite free beings in perfect equality with you? They simply chose to receive your cosmic telegram, and they took on a certain role in space and time to help you play out what you wanted to learn. What if you literally convinced yourself that that was the truth as solidly, as vehemently as you convince yourself that, you know, you're one of five children and you were in the middle and you were forgotten and you were victimized by this bully down the street and all of those things? What if you chose to value these thoughts with all of the energy, with all of the conviction that you've poured into valuing the thoughts of yourself as some other identity? I have talked to various people about this in the past, and some of them have said, that's just wacky. You're just making stuff up. The truth is this, 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 and this. The truth is the history that I have lived. And for anybody who's willing to look at that, we can recognize that whatever I think about myself is not the extent of who I am. And what I think about myself was given to me to think about myself by my language and my culture and my life experiences and teachers. And it doesn't have any value beyond the images that I create in my mind about it, the feeling sensations that I generate from those images. But in truth, every human being that's ever lived on this planet is born in a short period of time, died in a short period of time relative to the age of the planet, relative to the age of the solar system, and that this little planet is just a little blue marble floating through what we call time and space. And my thoughts about myself as some great and powerful Wizard of Oz are irrelevant to the truth of life and the oceans on this planet and the mountains and the clouds that move through the sky is irrelevant. Everything I think about myself is made up. And so what this lesson is calling us to is, why don't you make up something that's more enjoyable? Why don't you make up something, if this sounds good to you, make up this belief that you are the unlimited love of Christ. and that you're going to spend most of your time interacting with everyone and everything around you, actively beaming love to them, imagining that you have the ability to beam this energy of creation, this loving energy toward them, just like you would squirt water out of a fire hose. Now, we're only recommending that you do that if that seems to you like that would be an enjoyable way to experience yourself and your interactions with others. There's another exercise in Lesson 10 that says, try this one. Take a breath. Get centered where you are and say, here, right now, I am free. Heaven is right here in this moment. The past has passed away, and I can choose anew. So this day, I commit myself to teaching only love. I'm going to do that by sharing only loving thoughts. This one day, I'm not saying I'll do this forever, but right now, today, I will look upon everybody that I interact with, everybody who comes into my experience, everybody who comes into my thought, and I will first take that cleansing breath and hold it at the top and slow the exhale down and get my physical energy system to relax. And I will connect my conscious awareness to my source, the miracle of life moving through me. And then when I look out through my eyes, everything will have been transformed by the simple acknowledgement of the truth that all minds are joined. And instead of seeing somebody who's a stranger, I'm going to see somebody who's just like me. They walk as I walk. They feel as I feel. They long for things as I've longed for things. They've been humbled the way I've been humbled. They pray for peace as I have prayed for peace. And when I see that and recognize our true nature as the same and the connection between us, I will reconnect my conscious awareness to my source and extend that to them. I will extend the peace and the love and the compassion and the gratitude to them that I long for and that they long for. And in the extending of it, I get to experience it and I receive it. I can't give what I don't have. So I connect my awareness to my source, and then I extend it lovingly, everyone and everything around me. Lesson 13 is saying, choose again. If you don't like what your life experience is, reframe it. Make it up. Make it something playful. Make it something enjoyable. Make it something that's got more direct observation and the awareness that we don't truly know what anything is or is for. And every time we make up a definition that's limiting, we create that limiting experience for ourselves. And every time we make up a definition that's wide open and expansive, we create an entirely different experience for ourselves. The text goes on and says, if you sat down with these people that you call your parents, and you look at them as beings that you had called into your field of awareness, and you chose to see that they are infinite and free beings that are in perfect equality with you, and you chose to see that they simply chose to receive your cosmic telegram and they took on a certain role in space and time to help you play out what you wanted to learn. Would that begin to shift your identification with them as merely parents? For if you look upon them and say, these are my parents, instantly you've defined yourself as only their child. It is suggested that you play around with this, that you see the power and significance of defining yourself in any particular way. It's very, very important to bring awareness to the definitions you have given yourself and the ones that you keep insisting upon each and every day. because that's like dropping the same pebble into the same stream and creating the same effects over and over and over again. And nothing gets transformed when you do that. You simply keep repeating the cycle. It also brings up some fear. Your egoic mind will ask, well, what would happen if I let go of all those definitions that I'm familiar with? The answer, nothing will happen. Because in reality, those definitions have never truly limited your unlimited self from going on and creating and experiencing throughout all dimensions. The only change that could be said to occur is that that little tiny ray of your beingness that is currently dancing through the experience of being a mind, body, and space and time, that little part of you will begin to throw open the doors and actually start to access cosmic awareness. If you want the experience of walking on this planet as an enlightened master, first, come to understand the foundation upon which the way of transformation is based. Second, bring awareness to the definitions of yourself that you have become unconscious of. And then deliberately redefine yourself as you enter into this field of your experiences. So the first step is, wake up to the fact that you're more than just the body. You are unlimited spirit. The second step is, wake up to the beliefs you hold about being just this person, having had just these experiences, being, I'm only human, being, I'm not very smart, whatever the definitions are. We are invited to wake up to them and then deliberately redefine ourselves as we enter into the field of our experiences. Here's the nub. No one can make the decision for you. Yeshua, Jesus, has never enlightened anyone. He says, I have never even so much as lifted them an inch. I've merely chosen to demonstrate unlimitedness for myself. And part of that experience was taking on the crucifixion just so that I could learn to overcome death. But that was my choice, my pathway, my calling forth of experience. And I can tell you that it is so much grander to be in the body while being completely aware of your cosmic self. In the same moment, I must say to you, it is perfectly okay for you to perceive yourself as a limited ray of consciousness. Yes, there are certain results that will follow. But still, you are completely free to demonstrate that you choose, and your choice creates your experience. And you can do that for as long as you wish. You can create the experience of being small and limited and unhappy and abused and a victim. And you can create that as long as you desire. And as it's said in various other lessons, these friends of ours in spirit without body, they will wait patiently. Our choice to stay in misery or limitedness or smallness will not disturb their peace. Just like it said earlier in this lesson, nobody else's choices affect you or limit your ability to choose differently. And your choice to stay limited isn't going to keep anybody else from having their expansive experience of joy and aliveness and being in heaven right here, right now. They will continue And you can choose to continue on your own, or, and build suffering and build limitation and smallness, or you can choose limitlessness. You can choose again. Experience yourself as the energy of creation expressing in form, and understand that no one can stop that flow of life, joy, aliveness, gratitude, once you've chosen that as your birthright. So that's all we're going to read for today. We have time for comments and questions. We've got about 17 or 18 minutes if we want to use them. Michael and Jeannie are otherwise occupied today, so the second hour will be a replay of Empowered to Heal, I believe it is, the second hour. And so we can entertain comments or questions, or we can end early and start the second portion. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we'd love to hear from you. What's on your mind? Comments, questions, answers, testimonials? How is this setting with you as we're moving into the way of transformation? And what are the definitions that you have on yourself that continue to limit you? And how can we use the rest of this hour, the next 15 minutes, to our advantage, to be a blessing to you or others? 563-999-3581. Area code 314, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hello, this is Doug, Dr. Tim.
Hello, Doug.
Hi, I just felt to call in and say that I thought that I've heard you do this before, but every time it's like that particular, I mean, for me today anyway, to answer your question, you know, I just feel like that reading is and commentary is quite extraordinary and beautiful and empowering, and it's like something that I'm reaching for and don't even know, can't even see the full implications of. I can just see enough to know that there's tremendous value here, and like, how can I apply this? How can I deepen into it more? I mean, it's a journey, and I mainly, the impulse is just to say that, which is how it's impacting me, and thank you for doing it. I have found the entire series most helpful. So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I would remind us all that the key in this is, as they've told us several times in the first 12 lessons, is do it playfully. There's even a line where it says, let not seriousness enter the mind. And most of us want to get real serious about this. We want to get really,
yeah,
really good at loving and really, really good at compassion and really want to put our nose to the grindstone and not take no for an answer. And and this work keeps reminding us in various places that's not what they're suggesting, and that's not what's needed. There's even a lesson that says the way is easy and without effort. And boy, does that rankle some of the egos.
Yeah, and that is so wonderful and so
challenging
in just
status quo. Yeah, it challenges,
yes,
the status quo.
Absolutely. Juxtaposition to everything I've ever been taught, or, you know, pretty much everything I grew up with, everything I understood about the path to development and spirituality and progress and evolution, you know, of your soul on the journey. And I'm like, what? It it's easy and playful. Totally was like a heavy duty workout.
Yeah, it is a it's a different approach, and that's why it has the potential to yield different results. If it were the same kind of approach, it would yield the same kind of results. I mean, lots of different spiritual traditions remind us that every tool produces results like the tool. Right? You can't fight your way to peace. Right? You can't kill enough people to create lasting peace.
Right.
You can't rage your way into serenity. Right? You can't worry yourself into relaxation. So if you want joy and playfulness and, you know, satisfaction, start there. This came up last night. We were talking in the support group about it, and the idea is that Abraham Hicks says, understand that whenever you think you want something, you want a new house, a new car, a new relationship, more money, etc., an art or a piece of art or something, whenever you want that, what you really want is the emotion you're going to experience once that you think you're going to experience once you have it in your possession. And the problem with that, as Guy Finley points out, is that if you tie your happiness to acquiring that thing, then as soon as you acquire it, now you have the fear that you might lose it. And then if you lose it, you lose the good feeling you had. And he points out how absurd that is, that we miss, you know, the logic that doesn't make any sense at all. That the very thing that brings me peace and happiness instantly causes me fear in the next moment, that's ridiculous. But we don't even notice how insane these things are that we've been taught. We just buy into it and keep repeating it. So Abraham says, and Guy Finley says, I'll give you something to manifest. Manifest a way to be happy with whatever you have right now. And Abraham says, find a way to manifest the feeling, create the emotion that you want to experience, and then if you still want it, then go get the car or the work of art or the relationship. Because then you will know that your happiness, your contentment, your gratitude, your peace isn't dependent upon acquiring or maintaining possession of something outside of you. Right? You live into it at a different level, that this is truly an inside job.
Indeed. Indeed.
So try to do it playfully. Try to do it just... a little experiment I'm going to be running.
All right. Sounds good.
Anything else we can do for you today?
Not that I know. This is enough to
carry you into the afternoon.
Work with. Yeah. Thank you. All right.
Yeah. All right. Blessings. Thanks for the call.
Blessings.
So our area code, if you want to make a comment or a question before we move into our second portion of the show today, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a short conversation. We've got about 8 or 9 minutes left if we choose to use them, or we could start early with the second hour of Empowered to Heal, which was one of the lectures that Dr. Michael Rice gives. It talks about flow of energy and resonance and healing and integration. And it's the Dr. Michael Rice lectures, we spent probably a solid 8 years in our Tuesday support group listening to basically nothing but Dr. Michael Rice lectures, and they were, you know, why is this happening to me again? Empowered to heal, healing through relationships, codependence to interdependence, the laws of living, and getting the stress you need. I think there were 12 in total that we listened to, 12 two-hour lectures. One of them was not quite 2 hours. It was called A Course in Miracles, A New Beginning. And there was another one, Introduction to A Course in Miracles with Advanced Understanding. All of those lectures or the DVDs of them are available for purchase on Michael Rice's website, whyagain.org, and or you can find snippets of some of them, and sometimes a full hour lecture on the YouTube channel, if you go to whyagain.org and click on the YouTube channel link. And you can avail yourself of that, or you can order a copy of the DVD and listen to it at your own pleasure. There's a tremendous amount of useful material there and tools. Most of the lectures come with their own tool. And as we say in the introduction, they're some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. And it's the active use of those tools that's been improving the quality of my life for almost 18 years now. So, if there aren't any other hands up, I will start us in the second portion of our show today and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Here's your second hour.
You look back 2,000 years ago, and circumstances and situations were not much different. They said in those teachings, do not be molded by the world, or you will end up moldy. Essentially, that was the message, that if we let our mind energy system, if we let the frequencies we engage in be molded by the insanity of the world, then we would set up and structure our physiology according to that, and our lives according to that. You know, he looks at so much of what's happening in the media today, and the media says, oh, well, we're just reflecting the culture. Well, we may be reflecting somebody's culture in some little localized area, but when you put it on the media and punch it into millions of children's minds, you just pervaded the culture with that insanity. And it's time, I think, for us adults to stand up to the media and what's being pervaded as normal. Because once you build the brain cells, well, the media's excuse is, well, you know, they know the difference between fantasy and reality. That's not the point. That's like diverting the question. The point is what's been built into brain cells as normal, as reality. And if abusive parents and disrespectful parents is built into brain cells as normal, guess what's going to drive the behavior of that child as they grow? That's exactly what it's going to be. And if it's any of the other insanities that are going on that become glorified, I mean, just the simple fact that we name the perpetrators of the atrocities in our culture, how many who are in a state of despair, who have nothing in their minds to live for, well, gee, here's my chance to become known worldwide. What the heck? And so what do they do? If the media did nothing but to shut down its reporting of the names and details of those who commit some of these atrocities, I bet you we'd cut it in half because it wouldn't be so glorified. But to wake up to what it is we're doing with our mind energy is of key importance. And to come to the point where, regardless of what's happening in our world, we can hold the condition of love in our minds. Again, as I mentioned before the break, the original teachings that said what's most important in the law named three objects of attention: God, neighbor, and self. And in the ancient Aramaic, the word neighbor means anybody that you think about. That you had the requirement, if you want your world to be sane, that when you think of God, neighbor, or self, the requirement is that you keep the condition of love in your mind. When you can do that, if there's anything in your brain cell structure that is resonated by any of those objects of attention, when that surfaces, the exposure to love will transmute or change or heal that energy in you. And as you heal that in you, you become empowered. You become literally an empowered space to promote healing. The person who carries the energy of fear or hatred in their minds, because of this principle of resonance, just by walking through the universe and interacting with others, the energy field they carry will tend to resonate or activate that energy in everyone they touch or come close to. As you see any of those issues that are yours when they're in your face, as you heal them, those issues, then you walk among people and you carry with you an energy space that opens healing in everyone that you touch. Now, the world teaches us the opposite. Let's use an example. We hear a report of a child abuser. Terrible things that have been done to a child. Totally unjustified and unreasonable. What do most people want to do to the child abuser?
Kill.
Abuse them. Think about it as an energy dynamic. If the energy of abuse is blue, and we have someone who observes the child abuser who, in their world, out of the potential, has collapsed this energy we would call blue, this blue potential, then the person who says, let's abuse them, sets up a frequency that does what? Reinforces and creates more of it. Let's say we take this person who is the abuser and let's put them away in a jail cell so they could never touch or abuse another child, but let's publicize their abuse worldwide. And now let's watch 5 million people who look out through the abuse in their own minds and through the hatred in their own minds, and the fact that we have punished and incarcerated this person activates the vibration of abuse in all of those minds. Now you have a field that permeates the planet. And the person who has the potential to abuse but would never do it, you know, if you talk to most abusers afterwards, it's like, God, that's not what I wanted to do. I don't want to hit that kid. It's the last thing I want to do, but something just seems to take over. What takes over? Well, probably this guy, when he was a kid, was beaten, abused when he cried, and so in his file on crying is being beaten, abused. So now, when the child cries, what resonates and takes over his mind? Anybody here ever done anything against your own will and choice, something you didn't want to do? Go back and look at Paul. So many people are following the teachings of Paul today. And Paul said, why is it the things I would do, I cannot do? And the things I would not do are what I do. Paul didn't understand Jesus' teaching on forgiveness. He didn't know how to remove from his mind the realities that drove his behavior. Jesus taught people how to reach into their minds when those realities came forward and how to presence love. And in presencing love, when those realities came forward, forgiveness happened. That was erased from those minds. But here's the person who there's the potential for them to abuse, but the energy is not active enough in them for them to become active abusers. But with 5 million minds focused on this abuser over here, all sending the energy of abuse, what resonates in this mind? We've just created thousands more abusers. We don't need a penal system in our culture, folks. You cannot punish, you cannot incarcerate enough people to get rid of abuse. You can't do it. It will consume the whole gross national product. Look at it. You know, the investment analyzers are suggesting that it's one of the best growth industries to invest in. Think about it. I'm serious. Think about it.
Now, the more we focus on creating, you know, let's get tough on crime. Let's punish those bad guys. Punishment is the reason for the bad guys, quote unquote. It's the energy that's been impregnated into them that when it comes up, just like you and me, we don't have any control over. And unless we have tools with which to undo it, it will drive our behavior against our own will and choice. Now, does that mean we shouldn't put this guy behind bars? No. That's not what I'm saying. It might be very appropriate for us to take up a collection and say, this is a guy we can't have in our culture. But do we need to beat up on him? No. By beating up on him, we just set up more of the same abuse. What we need to do is we need to be able to create a space of love and healing. Now go back and hear in the context of energy, in the words of Jesus, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you. And you see what empowers you to heal. See, if you can love those that hate you, you find the part of your own mind that set up the event in the first place, and you expose it to love, and you heal. And when you create that space of healing, you now have the capacity to open that same space for this guy. But it's what we refuse to deal with that creates our own physiological demise and creates more and more of the insanity in the world. If you think about God, is there one reality in your mind that's less than love?
Well, if you were brought up in a lot of the traditions that said, God's going to get you for that,
hey, one of the major things that I run into oftentimes in churches is people who hate God. Because God took away their baby. God did this. God did all sorts. God didn't do any of that stuff. We're creators. Well, in the sense that there's only one actor in the world, God, there's only one power. God carries out our instructions, but it's we who set it up. Does that mean we're guilty? No. This isn't about guilt. This means that we're responsible as creators for what we do. And if we don't like what we've done, what we've set up, we need to own it and forgive it. So if you have a reality in your mind, unlike love for God, you better clean it up. Because it's your disease. If you think of neighbor, any other being on the planet. In Aramaic, now about the 6th century, they changed the meaning of the word neighbor. I remember one fellow that I worked with who was guiding a translation, and there was one of the best known Aramaists in the world back in the 70s who kept sending back into him, there were 5 translators working on a manuscript, and kept sending back into him translations of neighbor that were like the translation we use, the guy down the block. And so this fellow who was directing the translation sent it to a fellow who is the Pope of the Church of the East, a man named Mark Schumann. And the Church of the East has always used the Aramaic language. And the Pope of the Church of the East kind of laughed when he saw it coming back that way. He says, oh, I know what's happened. He said, he's just gotten caught up in those new dictionaries they wrote in the Aramaic back in the 6th century. The new dictionaries in the 6th century, when they changed the meaning of the word neighbor to be the guy down the block, instead of anybody that you think about. In the Aramaic language, there is no way to distinguish between physically near and mentally near. When you think about somebody, they're your neighbor. So now, it becomes your, if you want to be empowered to heal, I mean, do you really, truly want to be empowered to heal? It's a big stand for responsibility, because when you think of anyone on the planet, no matter what the atrocity is that they've done, you're required to hold the condition of love in your mind. That's the first statement of law. The only thing that would inhibit you from holding the condition of love in your mind is that perhaps you have a reality in your mind called hatred. If you have a reality in your mind called hatred, then somewhere in your physiology is a frequency called hatred. If that energy is in the big toe, guess what? You're going to have a diseased big toe. If that energy is in your kneecap, guess what? They're probably going to tell you you need surgery. If that energy is in your heart or your lung or your liver or your brain, they're going to tell you have a physical problem. But you don't have a physical problem because there is no physical world. Oh, Michael, now you're going too far. Wait a minute here. Let's go back and see if we can catch up with good science again. Einstein said what? On such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. A material world doesn't exist. An energy world exists. And if you hold the energy of hatred, whatever tissue it's in, it violates the integrity of the tissue. That violation of the integrity of your tissue structure is your disease. And it also sets up the frequency that manifests in your world. We're creators. So when you see that teaching of Jesus that said love for God, neighbor, and self, you see the brilliance of, you've got to keep that condition of love in your mind. And then if you have a neighbor that can activate hate in you, what happens? Your hate comes to the surface. When it comes to the surface and is exposed to love, there's a transmutation of energy and you heal. It's brilliant. It's not religious. It's brilliant. Notice in your life, the only time you've ever done something you didn't want to do was when you were in a condition other than love, right? Hostility or fear compromises human intelligence. Don't obey your mind's dictates when hostility or fear shows up. Stop. Forgive the hostility or fear. Once you understand forgiveness, you will never forgive anybody else again. Because forgiveness isn't about letting them off the hook. That's a Greek cheap copy. Remember, the Greeks externalized the powers and they said, forgive them, as though they're responsible for the reality you're experiencing in your mind and your body. Stop forgiving people. When somebody comes to me and says, oh, I don't need to do that. Why is this happening to me again, worship? I've forgiven everybody, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother. I know they've done no forgiveness work. They bought into the Greek concept, which is pardoning them. Now, if you want to pardon somebody, that's a nice thing to do. But when you pardon somebody, you've done nothing to change the reality in your mind, which is the energy in your body, which is the frequency with which you set up your quantum universe. You want to be empowered to heal? Think of a neighbor that can inspire hatred in you, and now with the presence of love, you heal hatred. And you heal. Thank you, neighbor, for showing me the part of my mind that I didn't want to deal with. Thank you for being the one that responded to this energy wave that I sent out that invited someone to do something hateful to me because I needed the opportunity to heal my hatred because I want to be empowered to heal. Who are we really? We're creators. If you think of yourself, now how many of us, when we were this high, were told how worthless we were? How many of us were told how stupid we were? How many of us were told how invaluable we were? How many of us were told that to love ourselves was some kind of a sin? Well, guess what? Every one of those realities in your mind has to be forgiven. Because as long as you hold a reality unlike love for self, you just broke the first law. How did it get to be so backward? How did it get to be so backward? And now that we see how backward it's gotten to be, how do we change it? Well, it's really simple. Unfortunately, it's not always easy. Because the first step in doing it is you got to remember to do it. Hey, you walk out the door committed to be fully loving, right? And somebody gives you the look, and what happens? Up comes the hate, up comes the fear, up comes the attack, let's get them. Oh God, I forgot again. And that's just part of the process, and that's okay to be in that process. You know, it's kind of like a constitutional growth that happens. It's a process that we go through. And it takes time to achieve that process of moving out of the old self. Remember Jesus said, and look at it from this energy context and this Adam Nafsha context. What did he say? In order for you to live, you've got to die. In other words, the survival self, the Adamos self, has to die in order for Nafsha, the soul, the soul, to actually come into full expression and live. And then you are in this world through your physiology, but you are not of the reality structure of the world. You take your instructions from another mind. Which mind? The mind of Christ. Which mind did Christ think with? He thought with the mind of love, which was called the mind of God. It becomes real simple and real practical. But you got to stop thinking with your human mind. As I said earlier, you got to be out of your mind. It's an important step in the process. And then you bring to your Adam mind the mind of God, the mind of Christ, the mind of love. And as you do, you heal everything in you that is unlike love, and you get to the point where the only frequency that you send out into this quantum universe is that frequency of love. And more around you starts to manifest that frequency, including the guy that seemed to be deserving of being put behind bars. Who was, I think it was Longfellow who said that if we could but see the secret pain and past of our enemies, it would be enough to dismantle all hostility. I'm only hostile at someone if I hold a reality called hostility. I'm not hostile at them because they said this or they did that or they did that. If their act caused my hostility, and there were 100 people in the room and that person did the act, there'd be 100 people in hostility, wouldn't there? But they can do their act in a room with 100 people, and I might be the only one with hostility, because I'm the only one with the reality called hostility to respond to that. Whose opportunity is that to heal? And who's in charge of whether or not you heal? And you become empowered to create the space of healing for others. You are. If you turn it over to the world, good luck. So for me, and you know, just... it boggles my mind more and more every time I teach this. It's one of the beauties of getting to do this work. Sometimes I wonder what I did to deserve it. Is that I get to remind myself over and over and over when my Adam mind forgets. Oh, that's right. That's what the commitment is. That's what I want to move in the direction of. To really move into that space where we take full 100% responsibility for the condition of love in our minds, in our emotions, and in our physiology. And if anything less than love comes up, you forgive it. And I don't care what your disease is. Remember, there's no physical, there's only an energy system. You put a distorting energy in the big toe, it shows up as a diseased big toe. Does the big toe have a disease? No, because there's no such thing as a big toe. There's an energy that reflects as a pattern. When you put an interfering energy into the pattern, until you remove the interfering energy, the pattern's disturbed and it looks diseased. But the power that knows how to build the big toe has built billions of them over many years and knows exactly how to rebuild yours. And guess what? In the next year, every cell in your body is going to totally and completely regenerate and replace itself. Or depending whose philosophy you buy into, it might take 7 years. But somewhere between a year and 7 years, you are not going to have one cell in your body that is the same as the one that's sitting in this room here today. You're going to get a totally new body. Now, if you're going to get a totally new body, and this is scientifically proven, if you're going to get a totally new body, how could you possibly have a disease 7 years from now that you say you have today? There's only one way. You refuse to remove the interfering energy, or you don't know how to forgive. You don't know how to forgive the frequency that's held in tissue that creates the distortion called disease. Now, what's the source of disease? Well, let's go back with new eyes, the eyes to see and the ears to hear, what was said in the scriptures about it. And I'm going to read from the book of James, James 1:5. And here's what he says. Now, let's extract this from a religious setting, and let's just look at it from a physiological and from an energy and a world energy and a quantum energy perspective. Let's look from there at this for a minute, okay? James 1:5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God that gives to all men liberally. A double-minded man is unstable in his ways. Blessed is he that endures temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life. What does it mean to endure temptation? Can you keep the condition of love in your mind when somebody comes up in your face that brings what's less than love in you? Let no man say he is tempted of God, for God tempts no one. Every man is tempted by his own errors. When a man conceives in error, he brings forth sin, and when it is finished, it brings forth death. Now remember, in Aramaic, the word sin is an archery term. It means off the target. When you bring an energy in that's off target, you conceive in sin. Now, it's interesting how many people give birth to an experience and they don't have a clue who the father was. They think it just happened and that they have no part in the process. And they don't realize that we're continuously in a state of conceiving. And when we conceive an energy that's off the mark, it brings forth distortion in the energy system, the physiological system. And we call it disease. And then we try and chase down a physical cause in something that isn't physical. Now, does that mean don't ever follow physical solutions? No. Be holy. Work on all levels. If there's something in the physiological world that will support your healing process, great. But remember to deal with the primary cause level, which is always in your power and in your hands. And you've got to do it for you. The old self has to die. That is, the old self has to be dismantled, and that's the process of forgiveness for Naksha, the true spiritual being, to show up with full-blown choice. Every good and perfect gift is from above. What does that mean? It means that if we stop looking to our past and what's already in the Adam mind, we've got to deal here with Satan. Remember the story about Satan? You know, Satan's important to understand. And it's a con job to think of Satan as this dude with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork running around out there to get us. You go to the book of Job, and Job tells us exactly the location of Satan. What does it say? The opening words say, the sons and daughters of God came together with God. Now, you'll notice that it's plural. There's a misunderstanding currently on the planet. There was only one Son of God. He lived and died 2,000 years ago. You're not welcome in the club. It's not what that book says. The sons and daughters of God came together with God, more than one. And the scriptures clearly define what it takes to be a son or daughter of God. As many are sons and daughters of God as are led by the Spirit of God. Now, in a practical sense, in the context we're speaking, what does that mean? That means that you're either led, you, Naksha, soul, are either led by your past, your Adam mind, or you're led by the mind of God. As many are sons and daughters of God as are led by the Spirit of God. Real simple. Real straightforward. If you are led by and in relationship with the Spirit of love, you're in relationship with the Spirit of God. So what does it say? The sons and daughters of God came together with God, and with them came Satan. And God said, Satan, from whence come you? And Satan said, from going to and fro upon the earth, from going back and forth upon it. So here we have an answer to the question. To and fro, back and forth. Now what is to and fro, back and forth? I've heard people try to explain that that meant that there was this being with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork out walking back and forth on the planet. Do you think they wasted two full lines of scripture to tell us that? I don't think so. Because you know, if you look just a few paragraphs later, the whole thing is repeated again. The sons of God came together with God. With them came Satan. God said, Satan, whence come you? And Satan said, from going to and fro upon the earth, from going back and forth upon it. What is to and fro, back and forth? It's a statement of our past. Now, you come forward into the New Testament. Jesus is getting ready to be crucified, which is his demonstration of how to hold the context of love and walk through to eternal life. And what happens? He tells Peter, hey, this is it. I'm going to go to be crucified. And Peter does what? Whoa, wait a minute. We'll stop it. We'll save you. What does Jesus say to him? He addresses him directly as Satan. He says, get thee behind me, Satan. And then he explains what he means. Now here, we've got the definition for Satan. To and fro, back and forth, it's the past. And now we need to know the location. What does Jesus say? Why does he call Peter Satan? He says, for you think in the mind of man. Adamo's mind. You want to know where Satan is? It's your mind. You want to know what Satan is? It's your past. When you're trapped in the past and you are not in the presence of the love of God, then you're living in, trapped in, Satan. So what needs to happen? All you need to do is apply the tool of forgiveness to dismantle whatever the current reality is from your past, and it evaporates. And when it evaporates, it can no longer grab you by the face and force you to do things against your own will and choice. And you will then live out of the mind of love, which is what? The mind of God. Oh, as many as are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. Gee, maybe this wasn't a religious process after all. Maybe this is just life. Maybe this is just how we're designed to live. Maybe that's all that teaching was about. But of course, for those who live in poverty and fear, there's not much money in that because you can't control people with that. So let's twist it around a little bit and make Satan some sort of external power that they have to chase after, and we be the special connection to God, and then we can take, gee, we can take their money, we can take their political vote, we can control their genitals. What's the game there? Let's go back and actually see what Jesus said to do. You know, Mark 10:25, the scribe says to Jesus, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? Now, I think that you could readily say that other words in our culture for eternal life, for inheriting eternal life, would be saved. Now, you'll notice that there are many that are hanging out with an ancient pagan ritual of blood sacrifice. But if you listen to Jesus, he didn't say anything about blood sacrifice or calling his name. He had the scribe quote back to him what the law said. He said to the scribe when he said, what do I do to inherit eternal life? In other words, what do I do to be empowered to heal and be saved from the insanity of the world in real practical terms? And Jesus said to him, well, what does the law say? How do you read it? And the scribe quotes back to him, well, the law says that I've got to love God with all my body, with all my strength, with all my mind, with all my heart, and with all my soul, and my neighbor as myself. And Jesus says, bingo. Well, he probably didn't say bingo. That probably wasn't a religious event back then. But what did he say? He said, you have spoken correctly. Do this and you shall live. Listen to that. He doesn't just intimately tie eternal life to holding the condition of love when you think of God, neighbor, and self. He ties life itself to that idea. He says, do this and you shall live. What is he saying there? He's saying that actual life for a human being depends on the presence of love in their minds. Just because a human being can get up and walk and talk does not mean that they're alive. You know, the prodigal son walked and talked, but you'll remember that when he started to return, the father said, look, your brother who was dead. It's the definition of death is to lose the capacity to hold the presence of love in your mind. That's the definition of death. We only truly become fully human. Does that mean it's bad or wrong to be in your Adam mind? No. That's just another part of life. But to be fully expressive of our human nature is to develop the capacity to keep love conscious, active, and present. We go into our purpose, personal power, and commitment workshop. We'll look at that and how that component fits in with our primary purpose for being here in life. So let's go back again to James 1:5. Every man is tempted by his own errors. When a man conceives an error, he brings forth sin, and when it is finished, it brings forth death. Every good and perfect gift is from above, from the love of God. Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man is not from God. Be doers of these words, not just hearers, deceiving yourself. Now, there are people who say all you have to do is say certain words. You don't have to do anything. Excuse me. But there's doing required. You need to live it in your physiology to get the energy to be expressed through your physiology and bring it to a fully healed state. To just bring it into mental awareness is to have an intellectual understanding, but if you're actually going to heal, it's got to visit your body. And the way it visits your body is when the person who can give you the look gives you the look that you're able to bring that presence of love through that painful reality in your mind and offer it to them. When you do that, you bring that out of intellectual understanding through your physiology, and that cracks the old insanity, the old realities that would guide us to behavior that doesn't belong in human experience. So be doers of these words, not just hearers, deceiving yourself. It's saying here that if you think you can just get away with chattering the name of a man named Jesus, that you're deceiving yourself. Take care of the orphan and the widow. In other words, you've got to go into service. And we'll talk about that in the Beatitudes. Fulfill the royal law of love thy neighbor as thyself, but if it is conditional upon their status, you have erred. Have faith, but do good works also. Faith without works is dead. The body without the spirit is dead. Your tongue is a little member, and it defiles your whole body. With it we bless God and curse men, which ought not to be. Remember, they equated the power that it takes to tame your own tongue? They said, he who can tame his own tongue is mightier than he that takes a city. This is not for cowards. This is not for little people to do. This is for people who are willing to be giant in courage, and that is the courage to face themselves, to actually live through everything in them that is less than love with the condition of love. You know, there are lots of people who are willing to die for a cause. And people talk about Jesus, and Jesus died for our sins. Jesus didn't die for our sins. That's an insane ego interpretation. Jesus lived to show us that sin couldn't kill us if we followed the law of holding the condition of love for neighbor. What happened to Jesus in the crucifixion scene? Well, gee, he comes out of the Garden of Gethsemane. And the high priest servant's there in his face. This high priest servant is the man who's going to take him to be killed. I mean, he's going to cause Jesus the worst suffering and pain that you could think about inflicting on a human being at that time. Now, Peter plays out the role of the ego mind. He shows how not to do it, right? He pulls out the sword and whacks off the high priest servant's ear. I can imagine Jesus might have given him the look at that moment. But then what does he do? He stops Jesus and he offers support and caring and love to the man who's going to have him killed. Now, I've had people who said to me, well, Michael, you know, that's all very interesting, but did you notice that that act got him dead? I say, yes, I noticed that act got him dead. Have you noticed they couldn't keep him that way? That is high-level wellness. That is the key to life. What did he demonstrate? He demonstrated in a very real circumstance how to hold the condition of love in front of a neighbor who would destroy you, and that the neighbor destroying you could not have an impact on you because you had such a state of high-level wellness that whatever injury he did, you immediately restructured the energy system and healed. That's the message of the crucifixion, not that suffering is the way. It's not what it's about. Incorrect message. But it takes a lot of courage to face, and it takes strength, and it takes commitment, and it takes work to get to the point where you can hold the condition of love, especially in the face of the person who knows how to give you the look. I mean, think about that person right now. What realities in your mind prevent you from holding love in their space? That's your work, not theirs. So, James 1:5 goes on to say, we bless God and curse men which ought not be. Does a fountain send forth sweet water and bitter? Is there a wise man imbued with knowledge among you Let him show out of a good conversation his works. If you have envying or strife in your hearts, stop your denial. This does not come from above, but is a source of confusion and error. You want to know what your confusion and error is about? It's about your own denial. They understood how the whole energy system worked. And they were saying it very clearly. The wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality or hypocrisy, and is sown in peace of them that make peace. From whence come fightings among you? Come they not hence, even from the lusts that war within your members? In other words, whatever you have suppressed within your own physiology, the heart, the lungs, the liver, your own members, there's where the warring happens. Where do the wars in the world come from? The energies that you hold set up a field that collapse and become the quantum potential that you call the world. If we have the majority of people on the planet at war, then we will experience a planet filled with war. Where does the healing have to take place? In our own members, in our own hearts. The principle of critical mass in physics was spoken by Jesus 2,000 years ago. He said, a little leavening leavens a whole loaf. It won't take everybody to change the energy system. Enough people who will face it in themselves, who will choose to be empowered to heal, will heal the energy of war in themselves. And they will set up an energy field that will erase the quantum potential we call war and bring about a world of peace. Simple physics. A little leavening leavens the whole loaf. Critical mass. Are you willing to be part of the critical mass? Are you willing to face yourself and deal with yourself and dismantle that old self? Whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of the war in your own members? Isaiah 1 says this, a nation in error, separated from God. We could hear that as separated from love. They are gone away backward. They will revolt more and more against love. The whole head is sick, the whole heart is faint. Where does sickness come from in the mind and in the emotions? Where does the physiology, we're at the point where it's getting to where quote-unquote heart attacks. I mean, think about that. Can a heart attack you? That's ridiculous. How can your heart attack you? But years and years and years of filling it, attacking it with energies that don't belong in it, will cause it to break down. But notice we live in a culture who talks about our hearts attacking us. It's ridiculous. Heart doesn't have a capacity to attack you. But it'll speak back to you if you destroy it with hatred and fear. The whole head is sick, the whole heart is faint. From the sole of the foot unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. Your land is desolate. Your cities burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. Are we at that point today? Look at what's going on in our culture. I mean, it's almost to the point where our land will hardly produce food that has nourishment in it anymore. What have we done to the land? Well, the land is another expression impacted by the quantum energies that we as human beings engage in. We have the ability as human beings to impact this whole physiological system. We're the only creature that has the capacity to originate mind energy that's out of harmony with the flow of creation. And we need to get back in step. Does that mean we're guilty, we're bad, we're wrong, we should be ashamed because we didn't do it right? No, we didn't know any better. Okay, if you got a reality called guilt, great. Take out a reality management worksheet and forgive your guilt. You got a reality called shame, great. Get in touch with it, own it. Oh, here it is. Get out a worksheet. Forgive shame. When you forgive every reality that is unlike love, what do you got left standing there? You've got who you are, love. It's the being that we are. Now, if you go to the Aramaic, in the Beatitudes, we're told in the Beatitudes that each Beatitude starts out with, blessed are they, as though there's some sort of an external force or external power that's going to bless us. In Aramaic, there's no such word or concept as blessed are they. The word in Aramaic is tuvehun. And tuvehun more properly translates like this, a latent neural structure. Now, what would a latent neural structure be? That would be something hidden in you. Let's start with a clean board with this. Let's think about this idea of latency. What would latent mean? It would mean an unconscious or a hidden or a neural structure that is unavailable. Fortunately, you and I don't need to search for the perfect realities to guide us, the perfect mode of being. It's already in us. So what does Jesus say in the Beatitudes? Before each Beatitude, he says this: a latent neurostructure, that is, we would say a vibratory frequency, implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being, becomes your conscious possession, you who, and then each of the Beatitudes gives you a set of instructions for how to achieve that state. How do you get this neural structure that's been hidden? If impacted in your mind are realities of hatred and realities of fear and realities of pain and realities of guilt, fault, blame, etc. If those are the realities that are active in your mind, then they cover up, they hide the reality structure that the Creator put in you to guide you. You already have in you, out of your created state, you already have in you the total set of instructions for how to live life in total harmony. It's in you. But 2,000 years ago, it was said it was unconscious or latent. It was hidden for most people. What is it hidden by? Remember Jesus talked about, you are the light of the world? When he said, you are the light of the world, he used exactly the same words as he used when he said, I am the light of the world. And he said, don't hide your light under a bushel basket. What was he saying in that context? He was saying that your light is there, but you've got all these realities that you've bought into from the world that overlay it. So you've got this basket hiding it. Get rid of the basket. How do you do that? Well, let's look at it. The first of the Beatitudes historically is interpreted as, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, has anybody here ever gotten really excited about being poor in spirit? Does that make a lot of sense? Now, the Aramaic language is an interesting language. Relative to, say, a language like English, there are very few words in Aramaic. And so to get different meanings and different contexts for a word, you take the meaning, they have one word and a dot over this letter, or what was often called a jot. Remember they said not a jot or tittle? A jot or tittle were the little marks that were used in Aramaic to determine what this word meant. Well, what would be the equivalent of a fly speck turns the word home into the word poor. So what did that first Beatitude say? Those who have a home in their spiritual nature. In other words, what? Those who live in their soul nature, nafsha, the stuff of love. So first order of business, to activate this neural structure, to strengthen enough to cause it to resonate and break through the bushel basket, to break through the realities that keep it latent and hidden, is you got to live in your spiritual nature. Now, what is that the equivalent of? We determined earlier, as many are the sons and daughters of God as are led by the Spirit of God. Those who live in their spiritual nature will strengthen and activate this neural structure. That will automatically start to crack up the ego structure, the self that has to die in order for you to live. It will automatically start to break down all of the frequencies in physiology that cause diseases. So you who have a home in Rucha, which was the active forces from God, yours is a heavenly estate. In other words, remember we talked earlier about the quantum potentials? If purple is the frequency that's the dominant, predominant resonant energy, what out of the quantum potential collapses and becomes your actual experience of the world? Oh, those who have this frequency as the active frequency in their minds will set up a field that will cause the world of the quantum potential to be what the Aramaic describes as a heavenly estate. Looks like pretty good physics to me. First step, you got to live in this realm. You can't live in your ego nature or the mind of Adam. Visit there, play there, and keep cleaning it up. You're not bad because there's something there. You're not wrong. You're not guilty. You're not at fault. You're not to blame. You're just responsible. And when you take responsibility, your mind can show you what's yours, and you can go, oh, this isn't what I choose to live with anymore. I'm going to throw it out. And when it comes up and grabs you by the face, you develop the skills through practice of peeling off the fingers and throwing it away. And when you live in a community, such as this community is about supporting people doing their work, when the world isn't about supporting you in it, you've got a community of friends that will. That will support you in bringing about the change. And you'll notice around all true spiritual work down through the ages, which we're describing here, communities have developed to support each other when the world was living differently. Now you take a look at what's going on in the world today. I mean, you take a look at what shows up in the media. And I just read an article in the paper today, and there are talk shows where they have bouncers to keep the people in the audience in line so they don't attack the people on the stage. I mean, this is like the Colosseum in Rome. It's evolved in such a way that to our culture it looks normal, but you step back from it with a bird's eye view, and man, this is insane. You know, some of the best entertainment, I understand one of the most popular shows, this was in this article today in the paper, I don't know if you saw it, but one of the most popular shows is about these three foul-mouthed kids about grade 3 level, or 4 kids, and one of the things they do in one of the episodes is poison their grandfather. This is entertainment today. I mean, think about that mind energy and what it's building into the brain cells. What are the kids who watch that and think that's important stuff? Like they got to get home from school to watch that. What is becoming the eyes to see and the ears to hear for them? What kind of a world can we expect to see? So the next beatitude, traditionally interpreted as, blessed are those who mourn their wrongs, for they will become... Ever get excited about mourning your wrongs? Well, in Aramaic, it doesn't say anything about mourning your wrongs. What it says is, a latent neural structure implanted by God will become your conscious possession. You who look into your errors in thought, you who love the truth, for you will be freed of mental stress. Oh, so what I have to do is look at my hatred, my fear, my sadness, my grief, my pain, my vengeance, my gossip, my slander, my disease process, my love of victimhood, and I need to apply the tool of forgiveness and remove it. How do I remove it? Well, all of the above. That's what all of our tools are about in this work. You remove it by forgiving and getting rid of those neural structures. And as you do that, you will be cured of stress. What's medicine now saying? They keep revising the numbers upward. A few years ago, they were saying 75% of disease is caused by stress. There are those people in the medical community now that are saying it's up in the high 90s. 2,000 years ago, they knew exactly on a physics level how this physiological system called the body worked and how to cure it of mental stress. You have to look into your errors in thought, and you have to know how to forgive them. Important skill to have. The next beatitude is historically interpreted as, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, there are those who would have us believe that the meek mean those who go around groveling in the earth. Why does that work? Well, those who want to control the meek keep them groveling, and hey, you got a good trip going. But in Aramaic, that word meek doesn't mean groveling in the earth like a worm. It's actually the word that ties in with humility. And in Aramaic, the word humility means the mental capacity of being able to perceive and cooperate with the highest and best in another. If I'm Mr. Hypercritic and I can see what's wrong with everybody, what am I doing? I'm going out and I'm gathering the worst of the mind energy from everybody that I see and I'm putting it in my physiology. What's going to happen to my quantum physical potential? It's going to degrade. Think about the Aramaic definition of humility. It's brilliant. What do I want to do? I want to look for the highest and best in everybody. There's something that every person has that I haven't been able to do yet. And I get to participate in that creative process by being able to look for and cooperate with the highest and best in each person. And as I do, what do I sow into my quantum potential? The very highest of every mind on the planet. When you look at your physiological system as an energy system, it looks like pretty good physics, doesn't it? Makes a lot of sense. And you'll find when you go to the Aramaic, everything that's taught in the scriptures just makes perfect sense. The next of the Beatitudes, historically interpreted as, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. They shall be filled. And that righteousness often becomes that righteous indignation, like, I have the right to be enraged with you. Wait a minute. If you're standing in front of someone who's enraged, if you're standing in front of someone who's teaching fear in the name of a guy named Jesus who said, here's how you cast out fear. You listen to fear in Jesus' context, and it sounds like a demon to be cast out. If you hear somebody promoting fear in that name, you know you're dealing with somebody who doesn't know what Jesus taught. Again, it's like Paul said, why is it the things I would do I cannot do, and the things I would not do are what I do? Didn't know how to change the realities in his own mind. Those who haven't yet learned what Jesus taught about forgiveness, who've only studied it from the Greek, think forgiveness means, oh, just keep letting them off the hook, let them off the hook. Forgiveness means you change the reality in your own mind and you're finished with it. And you become a clear space that is empowered to bring healing to everybody that you touch. Now, does that mean it's bad and wrong to go in the other direction? No. It's going to produce a perfect result. But what are we capable of? So in Aramaic, what does it say about those who hunger and thirst for righteousness? Here's what the Aramaic translation says. You who hunger for the mind structure underlying the attitude, judgment, and behavior described as just and fair behavior between people. So what does that mean? That means that when you activate this neural structure, this is the neural structure that underlies just and fair behavior and treatment. This has to be activated. If you step into spiritual process and you don't do the work of getting rid of the trash that's in your mind as a human being, and you don't activate this, then what will underlie your behavior? Well, if you've got rage and hatred and murder in your heart, you'll be able to make it logical to step into somebody's space and say, I come to bring you the love of my Master Christ, and if you won't accept it, I'll kill you. So, wait a minute, there's something wrong with that. Something crazy about that. And a lot of people rebel against true religious experience because somebody else didn't understand. Somebody else didn't know what was there. Does that make them bad or wrong? No, we're just human beings in process doing what human beings do, and we need to be able to take responsibility for our own 2 square feet. And whatever we're justified having hostility for, we've got to get rid of it to activate that other neural structure. So those who hunger for the mind structure underlying just attitude, judgment, and behavior, that fair behavior between people, they shall attain it, is what the promise is of that beatitude. The next one's generally interpreted as, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And how often do we stand in that? Well, I'll be merciful with you. It's nothing but an ego trip if we're in that space. But what is it in the Aramaic? Those who have pure love, and that pure love has conditions attached to it or expressions attached to it in the Aramaic translation of the Beatitudes. It says, those who have pure love encompassing judgment and behavior, they will therefore receive pure love, is what the Aramaic says there. The next one is historically interpreted as, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. In the Aramaic, what it says is, those who have a completely purified mind. In other words, the hatred, the fear, the anger, the anguish, the sadness, the grief, the pain has been erased. And that the result of that purified mind is that you will see God. You will have direct relationship with Allah, in the Aramaic, the invisible source of creation. That you will enter into direct relationship, and ultimately it's the only thing that will make the human being happy, because it is what we are a part of. Let me go back and just read a thought from Einstein in this regard. Einstein says this, a human being is a part of a whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences thoughts and feelings as separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. Einstein says, if you and I, now, is he reading from the Beatitudes here? What else does he say? This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection, to a few persons nearest us. Our task must be to widen our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures. Does that sound like Einstein understood you got to love your neighbor? You got to hold a condition in your mind? And so what is said here is that you'll enter direct relationship with God when you have a sound and purified mind. And then the last of the Beatitudes says, you who, through service, and there's an element here that's important, that's often missed in our Western culture, service. It's kind of like service is the rent that we pay for being here on the planet. And in this last of the Beatitudes that we're going to talk about, it speaks specifically, you who, through service, work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with God's will. That when we let ourselves get into this space where this neural structure is active, then we will understand that the reason we're here, and go back to your childhood and remember when you looked out at the world and you said, I know that life is about something other than that conflict and strife. And as you enter into direct relationship with God, you'll become one who brings that state of empowered to heal, not only into your own physiology, but into every relationship and every contact that you make. And I support and join with each and every one of you being in that state and invite you to pass it on to others. And I thank you for allowing me to share with you. Thank you.